Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we've got Hayes Baldwin back on the show. Last time we had him on, we were talking a little bit of early ice last year. We've kind of come full circle here, finally getting him back on. Hayes is, he's just one of my favorites. The more I pay attention to him on social media, you know, after that last podcast, learning a little bit of his origin story and that he's just out fishing a lot. We get caught up in this episode with all of his great adventures, including his guide season up on Lake Vermilion all summer long and just a few trips that he's taking and a recent tournament that he fished. We get a chance to highlight that a little bit, kind of a cool deal. And then just some fall fishing chatter that is just always a good time with somebody like Hayes. He's the man. He's just, he's just all over the place fishing everywhere. He's getting his hands on a ton of good bites all the time. And he's learning a lot. He's just an absolute student of the game, does it with tremendous passion. And yeah, it's just inspiring and motivating to chat with Hayes a little bit about what he's up to. It just gets me fired up to go try something new or experience something a little bit different all the time. So let's get into it here. We got Hayes Baldwin back on the JMO Podcast. As we prepare for the upcoming ice fishing season, making great gear choices is a big deal when it comes to being efficient and effective each and every time we head out onto the ice. Head to summitfishingequipment.com to check out what they've got. As a pioneer of forward-facing sonar portability, their shuttle design and carbon fiber pole mounting kit make it super easy to switch from boat usage right out onto the ice. Again, head to the website. The link is in the description of this podcast. Use promo code SUMMIT10 at checkout for a discount. The Onyx Fish App is the roadmap to your next great fishing adventure. The Onyx Fish App brings together all the great research tools that we talk about all the time on the JMO Podcast with all the top pros. I'm talking about satellite imagery, lake surveys, fisheries data, contour maps, the list goes on. They're all in one place now. Anglers in the Midwest have never had a more valuable research tool at their disposal. Head over to the website to subscribe today. Use promo code JMO for a discount at checkout. And I'll say it again, your next great fishing adventure that you don't even know exists can be found on the Onyx Fish app. The waterfall hunting opportunities here in the state of North Dakota are incredible. It's a tradition for so many friends and families to get together and spend this quality time in the field. But to be a great hunter also means to be a great steward of the land. I'm talking about being very respectful to landowners. And don't leave trash in the field. Definitely don't clean your birds and then throw carcasses back in the field. If you do encounter gates, make sure you leave them exactly how you found them, whether that is up or down. Hunting is such a wonderful component to North Dakota's legacy, and we need to keep it that way. So let's all agree this fall to hunt hard, hunt fair, and hunt for tomorrow. Zooloft Construction from Fargo, North Dakota is your trusted partner when it comes to protecting and enhancing your property, servicing the surrounding area with over 40 years of combined experience. They've built a reputation for delivering exceptional roofing, siding, gutter, and window solutions. With a team of skilled professionals using quality brands and products, that's how they ensure lasting results. To sum it up, Zooloft Construction is committed to exceeding customer expectations. If you want an appointment for a free estimate, check out Zooloft Construction at their website, zooloftconstruction.com, or call them at 701-630-0197. All those contacts are in the description of this podcast. Just for starters, man, a little recap of how your guide season went on Vermilion. Go ahead.
Yeah, man, it was excellent. I got to Vermilion this year like around May 17th, and I was there until basically September 24th is the day I left there. But yeah, the fishing from the beginning to end for the most part, was really good, excluding a very small amount of time in midsummer, which kind of happens every year. And, I fill that void really with some good, some good pan fishing and bass fishing, which is one of the other things that Vermilion has to offer that's excellent. Starting with May, the month of May when I was up there, and the water was still pretty cold. Like, when I got there, it was in the low to mid 50s, and we're catching fish pretty relatively shallow. and that bite was good. I actually remember when I got there, I was doing a little pre-fishing for a guide trip. I hooked into a 48-inch muskie. That thing pulled me around into the middle of this bay. I was in Smart's Bay, actually. And there was another boat floating nearby me. And they're like, do you need any help? I was like, no, I think I got it. And I actually barely fit it in my Frable net. The thing was folded over. And I landed that fish and thought to myself, I should target these muskies.
Yeah.
And later down the line, I'll hopefully tell you about, I caught a couple this year up there. But that was a cool highlight, I guess. And then, you know, kind of we're following those fish around. You know, when I got there, I was catching a lot of fish in the emerging weed beds and shallow rocks. And that pattern pretty much stuck through the middle of June. I kind of fished that way, and then started transitioning to some, you know, Vermilion's basically all rock, some more mid-lake kind of stuff, or the ends of main lake points, and say that 10 to 15, as opposed to that, you know, I was before fishing that like 6 to 10 foot stuff. And then following the fish out to more main lake stuff, like, you know, deeper rock humps and stuff like that. And then basically lead core season rolls around in August. That was pretty good this year for me. And then it basically everything that happened, it's basically everything that it happens in reverse. So I start to, at the end of August, September, go back up shallow where I was catching them in the spring. And then that bite fires up again until I left. I left some really bitey fish in 5 to 8 foot of water. You know, when I left in September, it was really excellent. The last couple days before I went out, I had a guide trip with three gentlemen. We caught 97 fish between the three of us. No giants, but a lot of, you know, if you're after just good action, man, that's a place you want to be. In the fall, I think the fishing was really excellent up there. I really hate to leave when it was so good, but really didn't have a choice. That was the end of the season for me, but yeah, it was fun. I got to fish with a lot of cool people and experience some interesting things this year, for sure up there. But yeah, it's a special place, and I'm very, very lucky to get to spend my summers there. Definitely.
Tell me a little bit about guiding out there and fishing out there and the patterns, because it's a big body of water. It's diverse. There's literally so much structure that I feel like I don't even know what question I need to ask, but I feel like it's the type of lake where if you were to stumble on like a really like reliable pattern, mm-hmm. you could run that pattern on different spots that set up yeah. like that for a month and never fish the same place twice, but run the same pattern. Or you could fish an area and probably run into three or four patterns any given day of any given time of year and stay in one area. I'm just so curious for you, man, like whether it's just entertaining yourself or just trying to like find the best bites possible. Like, what do you do to cover water out there, man? Or is it better to just hunker down in certain sections of the lake and look at multiple patterns? Like, tell me a little bit about like the day-to-day.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess I'll start with, I'm based out of Ludlow's Island Resort, which is on the west side of the lake in what they would consider to be Wake 'em Up Narrows. And so I do deal a lot with fishing on the west side. Although I will say this year I fish more east, just trying to expand on that because that's a larger section of water. But spending the last couple of seasons up there, you know, in the spring, I don't typically have to go super far. There's pretty good, you know, weed beds and some pretty good shallow rocks and stuff on the west side of the lake. And, you know, like you were saying before, you know, you get onto something. And Vermilion is a lake where you can replicate things in different places. And so the nice thing for me is I'm able to not beat up these spots so much when I find fish in, say, a weed line on the outside of a bay in, let's just say, 7 to 10 foot of water. I can take that and run down the lake 6 miles and find the same sort of bite, maybe not the exact same depth, the exact same type of weeds, but a similar pattern nonetheless. In the springtime, I guess, you know, as you move into, you know, that late June to July time frame, And then fish start to transition out to some of the more main lake stuff, shallower rock piles and stuff like that, a little bit deeper sand transitions. Again, once you find fish on them, you know, it's easy to replicate. I will say at this time, though, I you know, in July, you begin to head more east in towards Niles Bay, Wolf Bay. I don't quite get to Fraser until, you know, the end of July, August, where I tend to troll a lot of lead core, but I would say that July, June, July time frame, I spend a lot of time in Wolf Bay and Niles Bay. There's a little bit deeper weed lines in there that can be decent depending on, you know, how fast the water warms up. There's a lot of factors that go into the placement of the fish. Like this year was my third season there. And, you know, I just noticed that some of the spots where I had caught them the past 2 years were not actually were vacant of fish, to be honest with you. And so the lake does keep you on your toes in that sense, but it's definitely a lake where, you know, you can take a pattern and replicate it across the whole thing, which makes it fun too. If you're coming up there and just to check out the lake, you can really catch walleyes a variety of different ways as well. You know, if you like to throw artificials, you know, if you like to use live bait, you can do a little bit of anything to get bit out there. And that's what I appreciate about it so much. You know, from that aspect, it's just, yeah, it's just Matt, you know, it's 44,000 acres. So to be honest, I've been there 3 years and I've never taken a single guide trip in Big Bay, which is the largest section of water on the lake. And I've never taken customers in there. it's that big, you know.
But yeah, tell me a little bit about that lead core thing. I've actually heard about that. Talked to yep. people about that. You know, and like Jason's been over there and messed around with that a little bit. I'm sort of curious, you think about like northern Minnesota or like, you know, like we're out here in the western, like the in the Dakotas, you know, in the reservoir, like everybody's got lead core out here, but we think of lead core, you know, with, you know, we've got all access to multiple lines per person. So the whole trolling thing and contour trolling thing and the suspended fish, I'm curious how that sets up on Vermilion, because I've never really, yeah, no one's ever really like given me any kind of a detailed thing on that. Like what is it about the like lead core trolling that makes that effective? Like what's the pattern? What's that like?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, middle of August to the end of August. Sometimes it you know, starts earlier and ends later. It kind of depends. But it's usually when you start to get these midge hatches, little midge flies start begin to hatch. You know, if you could just drive with 2D, you know, imaging across, you know, you don't even have to have side imaging or live sonar or anything like that. And you'll see these walleyes just, I mean, they're just piled across these flats. And you know, and like that, say that 24 to 28 foot of water, kind of depending on where you are on the lake. And I mean, yes, you could pull spinners. There's guys that rig through them and do stuff like that. But I find that the lead core can be really, really effective at just combing, you know, miles and miles of water. And then once you get on and into an area where they are, like I had a weak stretch this year where I think I caught probably 200 to 250 walleyes out of like a mile stretch of water. You know, kind of in the middle section of the lake. And then it was like a light switch. One, you know, they were gone. I mean, they were nowhere in sight, and I'd caught them good for like I said, basically 7 to 10 days, just smashed them. And then they were gone. So they do move in big giant schools out there. And I sometimes even wonder where they come from, because I mean, you're talking, I have a live scope on my boat too. So I actually, have it on my trolling motor, so I'm able to see as I'm, you know, pulling crankbaits along, I'm able to sort of drive into the fish. But just the sheer amount of fish is absolutely nuts that get on these deep water flats. And like I said, I haven't even explored Big Bay, which is the largest section of water on Vermilion. I'm sure it's excellent, but spend a lot more time in kind of Niles and Fraser. And like I said, yeah, it's just a super effective way. You know, basically I'm trolling four colors, 20 foot of mono. I use, you know, Berkeley Flicker shads or Rapala number 5 shad wraps. I kind of prefer number 5s. Got to experiment with color. Some days it seems to matter. Other days it doesn't. But yeah, if you're coming to Vermilion in the month of August, make sure you have lead cord. There's guys with downriggers out there too, which is crazy.
That's interesting, man. That's an interesting thought, because you think like if like attacking a but like bug hatch season, like anywhere, like just generalizing walleye fishing and bug hatch season, you're thinking like crawlers.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're thinking you know, spinners.
Yeah.
You know, spinners and crawlers are like the whole finesse soft plastic thing, you know. And but you're talking about cover and water and yeah dude, that sounds like a total efficiency.
I think it forces a lot of times reaction bite out of these fish that are, you know, because I've watched guys around me where they'll be fishing, you know, pulling spinners and stuff, and I just don't see them catch anything. And when we got this thing dialed in, there's a lot of times where we're doubled up or we're reeling in a fish every 5 minutes. Like, it's really good. Like, I'll take a 4-hour trip and we'll catch 25 to 30 of them, you know, like we'll smack a bunch of them. And, guys around me are just not catching them. I think it's just a lot of times, like I said, it forces a reaction by that of whether, you know, you were snapping a jigging wrap. It's kind of that same sort of thing, or even casting crankbaits, whatever. You kind of bring it by the fish and they're sort of forced to eat it, you know, in a sense. Like, a lot of guys say you got to go 1.6 to 2 mile an hour. Well, some of the best days I had out there, I was going 2.2 to 2.4, you know, I was burnt fat, you know. And for as a fishing guide, it's like, how can I get the most fish in the boat for my customers and be efficient? And for that short period of time on Vermilion, there's not a better way to get a bunch of eaters in the boat. It's really not an excellent way to catch a bunch of big ones, but it's an excellent way to catch a number of them. Not to say we don't get big ones. Actually, the biggest fish in my boat to date was on lead core on Vermilion, but more so a pattern to get a lot of eaters. But I'd say the jig bite overall is kind of what I fish most of the year. Some sort of jig bite or slip bobbers too, but yeah, the lead is an excellent tool to have. And definitely if you're going up there, you know, anytime besides June. Actually, there's guys that probably use it all year up there, but
yeah, you could still argue that pulling cranks just about any day of the year will catch fish. And like, there's certain people that are so dialed with it, right? But I do find it interesting though, like, because we're, you know, that is one of those times of year, like that midsummer deal, you know, like especially before Forward Sonar showed up on the scene.
Yep.
You know, that the dog days of summer, when you're talking like August, like anywhere in the Midwest, that could be pretty unforgiving. That is not like, you know, you're talking about all the bug hatches and all these things. Like, we used to talk about bug hatches, like, you might as well stay home, right? Like,
yeah,
like we're nuancing these things a little bit better now. And Forward Sonar probably gets most of the headlines across Minnesota. It's like the one rod per person kind of a deal. It just seems like trolling isn't, you don't hear a whole lot about it, but man, like, you're missing out on something that might be kind of special. Like you said, you get into some of those mob schools, and you dial something like that in going 2.5 miles an hour, that lead core is just slapping. Like,
yeah,
you can do stuff.
And the thing is, man, to be honest, and you know, I'd never considered myself much of like a real good troller, if you will. But over the last few years, I've seen how effective it can be. And, I've considered putting a kicker on my boat. Like,
right. I'll sell you one.
You got one for me?
Yeah, I got one. I'll sell it to you cheap. I don't know how to get it off my boat, but.
And just, yeah. And then a lot of these guys, honestly, are actually buying kickers now. You know, there's a lot of guys doing a lot of live scoping up there. They're actually buying kickers to do this live scoping around with, so they don't put hours on their and their big engine.
That actually makes really good sense. I like conversations like that where we kind of highlight doing something super effective when you know, things can be really, really tough. Because, you know, we're making it sound like it's easy, we're making it sound like everybody knows about this, but the reality is like, yeah, like you said, I would be that guy that's rigging crawlers at, you know, 0.7, you know, on the same contour you're on. I'm seeing the same fish on my 2D, and I'm just struggling, wondering what in the heck I got to do. So yeah, man, I'm all about that stuff. Anything else from this summer? I got a few more things I want to hit you with, but anything else from this summer that was any other notable story? Anything that was just flat cool, or anything that that you had going on?
Yeah, there was a couple instances. I'm fortunate enough to take like a dozen to 20 bass trips, you know, within the, you know, the season. And I recall I took a bass trip with a couple of kids from Saskatchewan, Canada. And I guess where they live, there was only a river and they don't get out to fish much and they only catch like pike and sucker. So they're like, oh, we want to, you know, I'm thinking, gosh, you're from Canada and that's all you can catch up there, huh? And like, we want to try to catch some smallmouth. I'm like, all right, we were throwing wacky rigs and I was in the back of the boat throwing a popper, but this had to be like around the middle of July. And between the three of us in like 3 hours, we caught around 100 smallmouth. It was like bonkers. And I actually put my trolling motor down and I was actually, for anybody listening to this, you'll kind of, if you fish Vermilion, you'll kind of know the general area, but it was right around like Shamrock Landing, which is in the middle of the lake sort of. And I put my trolling motor down and we went 2.7 miles and caught fish the entire way, you know, and we smoked them. We caught like 100, seriously.
That's awesome.
And I'm like, you know, I think I had a bass trip a few days later. I went back to that same stretch and I'm like, we're going to fish this down. Guess how many I caught?
Not as many?
Zero.
Oh, man. What's happening to those fish, man? Are they, I mean, is it just like pelagic? Yeah. Are they just swimming away?
That's a good question. I actually believe smallmouth in Vermilion move more than any other fish. They're just like totally moving all the time. On the one of the things I think it has to do with is just like the amount of bait in the lake, like the crayfish and little juvenile perch and other, you know, shiners, whatever it may be, that had the fish there. It's like they'd left. Like, you know, I fished it down and didn't get bit after I smoked them, which is crazy, you know, and I'm like trying to put this pieces together in my head, how there's no fish here anymore. And it's odd. You could come back the next day and smoke them again. Like, they're just like, they move totally more than like any other fish in the lake, the smallmouth. But when you get on top of them and they're grouped up in certain areas, it can be really good. You know, you can have really good topwater bite and stuff. I actually was able to fish with Al Linder. We actually filmed the Linder's Angling Edge piece. Nice. On Vermilion, like 3 weeks ago, basically.
Nice.
And that was super fun. We caught them on X-Wrap Pops and Skitter Pops on topwater. And that was really cool to showcase that side of Vermilion, the smallmouth fishery that it is. And then the other thing that I got to do this summer that was pretty cool was musky fish a little bit. And I was able to land a 54-inch musky on July, I think it was July 17th or 18th. At 2 in the morning, I caught it. So that was pretty cool. I don't think I'll top that probably ever again. But I was able to boat 7 muskies this year. So that was cool. That was a fun experience. And, yeah, so Vermilion's definitely not just walleyes or smallmouths. There's muskies, panfish, pretty much got everything you need in it if you're a fisherman. So
have you ever gotten serious about muskies before?
No, man, I haven't. I think it's something I'll probably just do for fun once in a while. I'm afraid if I got into it, I'd actually be broke, you know?
Yeah.
It's really expensive. Some of those lures that we were throwing, this Zilla, which is a bait, a guy in Little Falls makes them, they're like $150 a piece, you know? So they're pretty, you know, all of a sudden you get 10, 20 of those and then you're out a couple
yeah,
grand.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Your banker, your financial manager's, you know, hitting you up wondering if there's some fraud.
I already spent too much money on crawlers and all this other stuff, man. Like bass jigs and all the other, all sorts of tackle that, you know, I'm afraid if I were to turn into a musky guy, I'd be living out of the back of the truck for real, for real.
The Onyx Fish App is the roadmap to your next great fishing adventure. The Onyx Fish App brings together all the great research tools that we talk about all the time on the JMO podcast with all the top pros. I'm talking about satellite imagery, lake surveys, fisheries data, contour maps, the list goes on. They're all in one place now. Anglers in the Midwest have never had a more valuable research tool at their disposal. Head over to the website to subscribe today. Use promo code JMO for a discount at checkout. And I'll say it again, your next great fishing adventure that you don't even know exists can be found on the Onyx Fish app. As we prepare for the upcoming ice fishing season, making great gear choices is a big deal when it comes to being efficient and effective each and every time we head out onto the ice. Head to summitfishingequipment.com to check out what they've got. As a pioneer of forward-facing sonar portability, their shuttle design and carbon fiber pole mounting kit make it super easy to switch from boat usage right out onto the ice. Again, head to the website. The link is in the description of this podcast. Use promo code SUMMIT10 at checkout for a discount. The waterfowl hunting opportunities here in the state of North Dakota are incredible. It's a tradition for so many friends and families to get together and spend this quality time in the field. But to be a great hunter also means to be a great steward of the land. I'm talking about being very respectful to landowners. And don't leave trash in the field. Definitely don't clean your birds and then throw carcasses back in the field. If you do encounter gates, make sure you leave them exactly how you found them, whether that is up or down. Hunting is such a wonderful component to North Dakota's legacy, and we need to keep it that way. So let's all agree this fall to hunt hard, hunt fair, and hunt for tomorrow. Zooloft Construction from Fargo, North Dakota is your trusted partner when it comes to protecting and enhancing your property, servicing the surrounding area with over 40 years of combined experience. They've built a reputation for delivering exceptional roofing, siding, gutter, and window solutions. With a team of skilled professionals using quality brands and products, that's how they ensure lasting results. To sum it up, Zooloft Construction is committed to exceeding customer expectations. If you want an appointment for a free estimate, check out Zooloft Construction at their website, zooloftconstruction.com, or call them at 701-630-0197. All those contacts are in the description of this podcast.
Yeah, there's some like serious depreciation on that stuff. You can't just like have buyer's remorse and then just go have a garage sale and get your money back for it. It's like, no, man.
No,
that's not the way it works. You're stuck.
Oh,
that's awesome.
Exactly.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, what do you think you learned then? Like, because you're fishing a body of water that you're very familiar with in other capacities.
Yeah.
So was there anything like when you tried to relook? Were you talking to other guys? Were you kind of working with people like maybe just doing everything on your own? Like was there anything about that experience or that little stretch there where you decided, you know, I'm going to just see if I can make something of this, little musky deal. You know, you're obviously on like a world-class musky body of water. Like for anybody that's in the know, there's big muskies on Vermilion, and, you know, musky anglers know that, but here you are, you've been guiding bass and walleyes for a few years. You're a fish head. Why not? But tell me a little bit about that, man. Was there anything, any big takeaways whatsoever that were just kind of neat, kind of cool?
Yeah. My friend Matt Schultz is a musky guide up there, and he kind of was like, I'll take you out, and I kind of knew already. I'd fished the summer prior and tried for him a little bit, but he kind of guides out there quite a bit too. So I went out with him and fished muskies. I caught a 48 incher with him the first night I went out in at the end of June, which was pretty cool. And then he kind of showed me the ropes on what exactly they're doing and how to catch them and stuff. And I kind of just, after that, I fished with him and caught some more. And that 54 incher actually caught on my own. With one of the employees at Love Those that I work with, Nate, he actually put it in the net. Thank goodness he was there, because the fish actually popped off. You know, once it was in the net, the hook popped off. So thank goodness he was there. But yeah, just a pattern of fishing them at night. And, you know, really what I can say is it's pretty shallow water. I don't want to give all of these secrets.
Yeah, that I was going to kind of ask you, you know, in that same way. I know, you know, there's probably, especially when you're talking muskies, without sharing too much, is it, you know, if you're just kind of, you know, big picture talk here, like, is it a forage thing? Like, is it a, you know, talking about the time of day, that was probably a little bit important, you know, doing the whole nighttime thing. Yeah. Like, is there any, like, you know, was there just like some big picture things there that were kind of that made it like a completely different fishing experience for you versus like the traditional, like how you approach a day of bass fishing or approach a day of walleye fishing? I find that stuff kind of fascinating.
Yeah. It's definitely like definitely bait fish focused out there. The Vermilion is such a so rich with a tule and whitefish, which, you know, in July, in peak something, July and June, are actually spend a lot of time in deep water, but there's a lot of them up real high in the water column. And so, actually muskies, after they spawn, a lot of them head for deep water, but, a lot of the muskies are actually not so far underneath the surface. And so that's one of the big things, is a lot of guys catch them, you know, suspended, basically over deeper water. And that's basically the gist of it. There's lots and lots of deep water on Vermilion, so you kind of have to experiment with where you're fishing. But they'd made it popular up there, like I think 12 years ago or 15 years ago, they did a you know, that open water casting were able to catch fish. And now with the advent of, you know, forward facing and stuff like that, it's become a little bit easier. It's they're still muskies and they're still tough to catch, I'll tell you that. But
yeah,
I mean, it's you see a lot of boats out there doing it, so it's fun. It's something different, you know.
You know, this is something that I get from guys like you, like in my own home, like in my own boat. Like, things that motivate me is just being able to say that last little statement there, like that it's something different. Yeah. I don't the industry completely affected me or completely influenced me into embracing and loving and really just like pursuing the something different. Every time I go out, like it's almost painful. It's almost distasteful for me to go out and fish a memory of any kind. Now, don't get me wrong. I go back to lakes. I go back to spots usually because I probably maybe don't feel like I totally dialed it in last time and I just need one more crack at it. But if I ever feel like I ever even got close to like figuring something out, like I'm so, I get so much more excited about what the next thing is. And a lot of times just a different species is like so much is like epitomizes that. It's like, you know, you can fish walleyes on one slough, you know, here out here in North Dakota, for example. And then it's like, I can tell myself that I did something different by going to another slough that has a different name, but it's like the same fish, same pattern, same everything, right? And I got to do those things sometimes to gain confidence. So I'm not going to poo-poo anybody listening that's like super into that. But, you know, somebody like you that's like, I mean, we learned about this last time. I mean, you're the fishing gypsy, man. You're just like, you are pursuing like an understanding of all these great bites that you can get your hands on, and you're learning so much. And, you know, when I witness somebody like you that like embraces that of like, you know, getting triggered in your mind, you know, that man, here I am. Well, why not just get a little bit weird about muskies for just a little bit? And it was, and it's so worth it, man. And it's like, you just have that really cool experience. So I love hearing that stuff. That those stories like super fire me up. It's like, it might not be muskies for me. It might be like, you know, smallmouth or big pike, actually. Like, I bought a bunch of big pike tackle here recently I'm hoping to do something like that here this fall before I winterize the boat. And it's like, you know, that those are the things that just super fire me up, man. It's like, I have no idea what I'm getting into, but I know when it's all said and done, there'll be something. There'll be a takeaway. You know, there'll be something that'll just be a super cool experience. And if I'm lucky, it'll be, you know, you catching that 54 incher. Like, that's lit. I mean, that's like you obviously got like validated with that catch.
And it's like, I mean, it's just something different. Like I was saying before, and it's like, when you do the same thing day after day after day, and you know, I guide a lot of walleyes and I guide a lot of smallmouth, you know, once I leave, I'm looking forward to go fish for largemouth or crappie or something different. It doesn't really matter. I like to just literally fish what's in front of me. And, you know, I pick a new lake. Since I got back, I've fished, you know, half a dozen or eight new lakes, back around Brainerd here. And that's my goal. Like tomorrow I'm going to wake up and pick a new lake and go there and fish and do it again the next day and the next day. Like by the time it's over, I want to have fished them all if it's possible, but
yeah.
Just new lakes, I don't really care what I'm fishing for, to be quite honest with you. Keep it fresh and keep it new is the biggest thing that keeps me entertained with it, you know, and involved for sure.
I heard you went up to Rainy this summer.
Yeah.
Tell me about that one.
Yeah, that's an excellent, you know, and for anybody listening, we're out of Camp Narrows Lodge. It's basically out of outside of Fort Francis, about 45 minutes or an hour. So not a bad drive over the border, you know, like an hour and 45 minutes over the border to get to basically Northwest Bay of Rainy Lake. And Manitou Sound is about as far as you can go. That's another maybe 30-minute boat ride from where we were at. But really excellent. We spent basically 3.5 days up there, and I bet we caught 100 some walleye. And I'll bet you the average fish was 22, 23 inches. And
had you ever been up there before?
Never.
Oh, yeah. So this is cool. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'd been to the south end of Rainy, actually, on the U.S. side, but we were crappie fishing. So I can't even count that. That was an excellent bite in and of itself, and we could talk about that later. But this walleye bite, you know, this season I actually got a 16-inch live scope screen on my trolling motor. So trying to dial that in and learn that thing. There's probably no better place than the north side of Rainy to do that. There's a lot of suspended fish out there. You can throw pretty much anything and get bit if you throw enough fish. Every point or hump, and I'm not even exaggerating, had like walleyes all over it and big ones, you know. The biggest one we got was only 28.5, but I remember we had,
that's a monster though.
Yeah, back-to-back cast 28s. I mean, like big, you know, and you hear about, and even out just like watching on YouTube and stuff, some of these guys that spend time up there, how good it is. And it's really, I think it's kind of a pretty well-kept, I guess, secret, to be honest. I don't think a lot, it's really talked about a lot, but if you have the opportunity to go up there, do it. I mean, we were there for like, goodness, yeah, 3.5 days. I think I saw 6-7 boats total in that time.
What got you into that, man? Like, I'm so fascinated. Like this might be a dumb question to you because you're just on a fishing trip like all the time, you know, whether you're guiding or not, but like, you know, for so many of us, it trips up to like, you know, the Canadian side of Rainy Lake, like don't just fall out of the sky for us mere mortals, man. How does that stuff like happen to you?
Well, my friend Bill Linder was up there with some of his buddies.
Oh yeah.
He just had gave me the invite to come up there. And so I went with my friend Kiana. She actually was able to catch a number of big fish too. When we were up there, but he was up there with like a group of like six or eight other people, and some of them had left, and one of the cabins had opened up, and it was sort of a spur of the moment thing. I had like 4 days without a guide trip on the books, which is sort of a rarity for me, and I was like, it's time to go, like pack it up. And it was a last minute kind of thing. You know, I didn't get a whole lot of advance notice on it, but I was like, I got to go, you know, because I knew how good it could be, I guess. And definitely once I got up there and saw the, you know, how it was all laid out and how, you know, a lot of these spots where these fish were positioned, where you're actually like, you know, fishing around these deep reefs and stuff. And then you got these walleyes like in 30 foot of water, but they're only like 10, 15 feet down. You know, a lot of times when you see that, you can pretty much pick any bait in the box and throw it at fish like that. I've learned, and they're pretty responsive to the baits, you know, and that's happening like everywhere in midsummer on Rainy. So if you can get up there at that time, definitely drop everything and go, I guess is what I'm saying.
Another thing that I know about you, because we got a mutual friend, Jaden Thomas. I've hung out with Jaden, you know, as much as I can, man. I, you know, just had some really spirited fishing conversations. Anytime I ever hang out with him, man, it's like hard to get sleep. It's hard to go to bed hanging out with Jaden, and the thought of you guys being buddies and getting together, it's just almost probably too much to handle. But you guys fished a tournament recently, and And I kind of want to highlight the tournament a little bit, maybe talk about that and what your history is with it, because it's kind of a cool little deal that I'm hearing about more and more. And then I kind of want the fishing story too, alongside of it. So, help me out here a little bit, recently here, just a couple, a week or two ago, fishing, a recent tournament, man. Give me the whole story.
Yeah. So it's called the Fishing and Hunger event on Gull Lake. Walleye Dan is kind of the guy that puts it together. He's a guide here in Brainerd. And then one of the food shelves that, you know, they pack meals for, you know, hungry kids all over the world. So it's a charity event, and you know, a lot of the money gets donated to charity, but it's a $16,000 first prize. It's 125 boat field, and it usually fills up, and this was their, I believe, 13th year and my 11th year doing it. I did it the first 9 years with a buddy named Levi Christensen. I think I'd spoke about him before. He actually invented the iFish Pro tip up, which is a tip up that a lot of people use through the ice. But him and I were tournament partners, bass fishing tournament partners forever, and wanted to try something different. So we started fishing the Walleye Dan. And then, you know, we fished it for 9 years. And a couple of years ago, he kind of life began to hit him a little harder, and he couldn't quite make it work. And so I fished out with my buddy Justin last year. We did not do so hot. The wind was blowing pretty hard, and we ended up not even weighing in. You know, but this year I fished with buddy Jaden, who him and I have fished two other tournaments prior to that and done pretty well. We took a second place and a fifth place in the other one. So the other two walleye tournaments I'd fished with him, we had a good track record. So I was like, I think Jaden and I could do pretty well in this deal. And we went out and pre-fished for 2 days, Thursday and Friday, prior to the beginning of the tournament, and located some fish. And come game day, we were able to put together like 15.31, I believe. And that was cool, and it was good enough for eighth place out of 120-some boats. So I was happy with that, just rolling back to Brainerd here. I really didn't get a super good look at the lake. We were only here for like 2.5 days, so I will take it, you know. And it's an excellent event, you know, for anyone that wants to fish it. There's always seems to be a few open spots, you know, and Gull Lake is really a really, really cool, diverse lake, and it's absolutely packed full of walleyes. There's like more walleyes in here probably than like I've ever seen. You know, a lot of it probably has to do with, you know, the forward facing. A lot of these fish that we're catching actually were really low, related to nothing. They were what I would deem to be floaters, really, to where you actually put your trolling motor down and basically just drive the edges of these weed lines and stuff and just about pan around till you can find some, and then throw baits at enough of them and you'll get bit. But
so by Minnesota standards, I mean, I'm just sort of like assuming here, but you know, just talking about the format, you know, two over 20, and then you got to do your unders. Or tell me about the format and just kind of how that factors into strategizing for this tournament.
Yeah. And it's just one of those things where it's five fish, one over 20 inches. So basically your other four have to be under 20. So, you know, good unders would be, you know, in Gull are like 18 and 19 and 3/4, you know, basically.
How many can you have in your live well?
You can have 12 in your live well. So which would be your,
so limit. You can have a 2-man limit.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, but you're just at the end of the day, what you're weighing in is just five fish, you know? So yeah, it's a good event. You know, it's a good tough format. It's not really like an AIM tournament, which are like mostly catch, picture, release, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that kind of explains the weights a little bit too. And that's something that I always like to clarify with all the different tournament formats out there. I can have a lot of tournament conversations on here, and it's like,
yeah,
you know, different states, different, you know, yeah. You know, so some people might think, oh, 15 pounds, like, that, you know, that wouldn't cash a check on Lake Erie for the last 30 years. It's like, okay, well, we're talking about, you know, apples and oranges here. But that, you know, so one over 20 and then the rest are under 20. But I'm always curious too with those slot tournaments, like for you and Jaden, you know,
did you guys have to kind of pattern both, you know, your bigs and your littles? Both, you had two days of pre-fishing like that.
Yeah, I would say a lot of the are under, so fish under 20 inches were in and around the weeds. Like, you know, whether they were suspended in the weeds or like near bottom, they were pretty close to the weeds. And I know a lot of the more of the bigger fish that we caught practicing, you know, like I don't think we cracked one over 27 and a half, but in practice, but the big ones were kind of just sort of high floating, just kind of like, you know, off the weed line, just kind of out over basin sort of. And come tournament day, I actually cracked, I caught a 28 incher and I'm like, you know, but it was skinny. And so the fish only weighed 6'3", which I think is probably honestly a half pound light, you know, which would have helped our total for sure. It would have bumped us up a little bit if that was a normal size fish. But it's funny, we actually fished this walleye alliance spring tournament years ago on Gull. And we'd stuck a 29 and a quarter that weighed like 6.5. And the thing was skinny. And somebody had caught a 27 that in that same tournament, the people that beat us by like, they won by like 0.2 ounces. Their 27 weighed like 7.5 or something crazy like that, you know? So I feel like I'm a bit cursed with long fish tournaments.
But you can't throw that fish back, right? I mean, you catch a 28 incher on tournament day, that sucker is going in the live well. Did that one end up being your way fish though?
It did. Yeah. And previous to that, we had one in there that was 25 and a half that weighed almost 6 pounds. So it was a real healthy 25 and a half. And then of course we catch this 28 that's 6'3", you know, and we don't really have a choice. Like we're going to obviously take fish, but it was definitely, that's just the way tournament fishing goes. I really think, you know, now with forward facing and stuff, man, it's I really truly believe who can cover the most amount of water and put baits in front of the most fish. That's who's gonna win the tournament at the end of the day. That's what I believe, you know, to be. And it's what's gonna force me to get, instead of AGMs, I'm getting lithium batteries in my boat next year, just because I know I'm gonna be flying. You know, if I want to be, trolling around live scoping, I gotta be able to not kill my batteries out after 8 hours. You know, but. That's sort of the name of the game now. If you want to compete, you know, at a high level, you got to be good with that. Everyone, you look around, everyone's fishing in the front of the boat together, you know, where years and years ago, right, it was more, this tournament was actually exclusively one with a lot of guys live bait rigging, you know, minnows. Not to say that doesn't work anymore, but it's not so much a winning formula, but that's just the way that the direction that it's going, you know, and I like it or leave it basically, right?
Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I love rigging a big minnow like anybody.
Oh, yeah. Me too.
But I also don't mind if I don't have to buy quite so many red tails.
Yeah, right?
Well, dude, I love it, man. What else do you got planned? You know, you kind of mentioned it that, you know, you utilize fall for a little bit of fun fishing. But, you know, before we sign it off here, what's your deal in the fall leading into early ice? I think we actually kind of talked early ice last time, the first time I had you on. So we're kind of coming full circle here. Yeah, man, as far as fall fishing, anything that that you feel like is popping off this year that you kind of got your eye on, or are you going to go back to Old Faithful, or what's your fall you think going to shape up with?
I'll do the same thing I'm doing now in down west of the cities there, like from Annandale, Hutchinson, and all around up in there, and try to fish some new bodies of water, mainly for largemouth, smallmouths, and walleyes, you know, one of the three, and mostly probably bass fishing for the next month. Really excellent bites gonna start here once we get, we're, you know, turnover is looming on a lot of these lakes right now. I saw water temps today where I was at like 57-56. We get stiff north wind, you know, I think that water is going to turn over and flip, and there should be a lot of a push of fish back into pretty shallow water. So you'll be able to, one of the things I love about this time of year is you're able to, especially as far as bass fishing goes, you can throw a spinner bait and a chatter bait and cover a lot of water and catch fish. Or on the flip side, you can, you know, flip a jig or fish slower and catch fish depending on what lake you're on, You can do it either way that you like. And then as far as the walleyes go, you know, coming up here in the next few weeks down on Lake Minnetonka, another pretty underutilized bite, if you ask me. A good, excellent trolling bite, you know, pulling stick baits, casting ripping rafts on certain, you know, sand spots or clean spots if you can find them. A lot of the weeds are starting to die off, and, you know, the fish pull back up. A lot of them pull back up shallow in the fall, and they're pretty susceptible to, you know, you pull a number 11 hit stick or original floater over their head, they're gonna eat it. And that's a night bite, and you'll find me out there until 3-4 in the morning some nights. But yeah, I don't really like, I don't have anything specifically planned, but other than just to fish as many new bodies of water as possible, maybe revisit some old bites that were good. But I'll take a pepper in a couple more guide trips, not many, only specific. I'll do a few on Tonka, and I'll do a couple for bass. If I get on a good bite, I can make a phone call and get someone in my boat to jump in and share some hook sets with, because it's fun to do it alone and all, but I don't know, sometimes it just doesn't feel right, you know. But
you know, I got one more fishing question, you know, because Minnetonka, right, like even just from a boat pressure and jet skis and all that jazz, but fishing, yeah, pressure as well, like Minnetonka, just being in proximity, yeah, to the cities, like that's a pressured lake, right? I mean, those are pressured fish when you get to the end of summer, you know, whether it's, again, whether, you know, fishing pressure is one thing, but just all the boats running around there.
Yeah.
One thing that we talk about in the, one thing that just comes up with so many guys in the fall, what I'm getting with this is like community spots, like aren't so community anymore, where it's like, there's a reason those community spots are community, because they're probably pretty good. They're probably big, easy spots to find, but they're probably good and they have fish on them too. The type of spots that you just wish you could fish, but you could never get yourself to, you know, the third week of July, just because, you know, it's just going to be full of boats and there's going to be four tournament boats on it every single Saturday and yada, yada. Like, you know, the whole list. I'm curious for you, when you make it all the way back to Tonka and it's October and say it, the weather stays nice in early November even, and you're still getting out there, like, is that kind of a thing that happens down there too, where, you know, you don't have to overthink it on such a pressured body of water anymore, because like some of that stuff recharges and gets refreshed. Like, what's the story there?
Yeah, it's, you know, if anybody listening to this knows anything about Tonka, like, you know, it is mostly in the channels. We fish a lot around the channels. Minnetonka is a collection of like 13 or 15 different lakes, whatever it may be. I don't know the exact number, but the channels that connect them draw, you know, there's current in them. They're pretty vacant of weeds. It's mostly just rock and sand. And, you know, that water hits that, you know, fifth around that, you know, I'd find the best bite to be actually, you know, these last few years in like the beginning to middle of November, right around that water gets 50 and under, all those fish really, really begin to pile in there. And then you get some nights where you get rain. Like, I had a really excellent night last year. I was actually guiding these people where it was actually pouring rain and the water was just rushing down into the, you know, through these, you know, culverts and stuff and flowing down off these, you know, bridges, and it was just like the water was all churned up and the fish were like on crack, to be honest with you. It was like crazy. We caught like 20 some walleyes in like a span of like 2.5 hours. Now it's not always like that, but you get some big winds or stuff like that, it turns the water up, it makes the bite even better, to be honest. So you want to pick those, especially on Tonka, pick those crappy nights. That's when they're really chewing. And we caught a 28-incher last year that weighed like 9.8 or something ridiculous like that. There's some legitimate big giant fish in there, and it's community stuff, like you were saying, man. Yeah, it's where in the summertime it's impossible to fish it, right? Like, there's 300 boats coming in and out of it every day, whatever, wherever it may be that you're on the lake. But come, you know, October, November, pretty much everyone's off the lake. The only people you see out there are fishermen. And if you're, you know, you really want to experience a good bite and you're around the Twin Cities, like, you don't have to go far. And like, it is severely underrated, in my opinion. It's a really excellent all-around lake, muskies, walleyes, bass, everything, crappies. It's a heck of a lake. It deserves more love, but
yeah, like, especially this time of year.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And I think that stuff, that exact same story is what we talk about everywhere, every fall. And it doesn't matter, Hayes, why is it that it doesn't matter how much we talk about it, how much anybody talks about it?
It doesn't matter. Yeah.
It doesn't matter. You could literally tell people what boat ramp you're going to be at tomorrow at 9:45 and you're going to crush them and you guarantee it and you're going to be the only one that shows up.
And
Man, it's like, what are we doing? It's like, man, and it takes all kinds, man. I appreciate everything everybody's got going on. Like, I'm not saying that, like, people don't have stuff going on this time of year.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it is what it is. But, man, it's just, it's amazing. Man, it's amazing just how cool it is to think about and talk about and experience what fishing can be this time of year. But I think on a lot of people's home body of water, especially, you know, in anywhere that, you know, you would ever complain about fishing pressure being a thing. If your home body of water is a, you know, just any recreational lake in Wisconsin or Michigan, Minnesota, Iowa, you know, out here in the Dakotas, like if you ever complain about fishing pressure on your favorite spots, on your favorite home body of water, just wait till this time of year. And it doesn't matter how many flyers you put up. It doesn't matter if you, you know, preach a sermon in church on Sunday, like, hey, everybody, let's do this. It doesn't matter. It's going to be good. And you're going to probably be able to fish a lot of excellent water by yourself, even on lakes sometimes like Minnetonka, where you're around a million people and a ton of great anglers. There's so many stud anglers that where Minnetonka is like their home body of water. But it just, man, it's in the fall, the opportunity is just absolutely on the table.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Check it. Yeah, for sure.
Well, Hayes, man, I appreciate the time, dude. And I just love the stories. I just love kind of getting to know you more and more every time I get a chance to talk to you and you know, getting to know you through your fishing stories and what you like to do. It fires me up. We'll just wrap it up. I mean, I'll probably put some of this stuff in the intro, too, just so people hear it right away. But if you got any contact information, if anybody or whenever you start booking trips for next year, or I guess I'm maybe assuming too much that you're going to go back and guide on Vermilion next year. But you know, promote yourself or anything that you want to throw out there, man. Now's the time.
My name is Hayes Baldwin. I'm a multi-species Minnesota fish guide in the West Metro, Brainerd, and Lake Vermilion for the majority of the summer. If you're looking to book a trip with me anywhere I may be, please contact me at 612-419-4828. Hayes.Baldwin on Instagram or Hayes Baldwin on Facebook. Any way you want to get a hold of me works. And I will be guiding around the metro in April and part of the beginning of May, and then transitioning to Brainerd until the end of May, where I will then go to Vermilion until September. So basically June 1 through, you know, September 25, say, I will be on Vermilion and then back to Brainerd. I'm kind of bouncing around. If there's a time that you want to get books, definitely get a hold of me and can get you on the books sooner rather than later. I will probably fill up pretty quick as we approach you know, springtime. So get a hold of me if you want to come out and stretch the string, and we'll catch a bunch of fish. But appreciate
and just have a good time.
Yeah, absolutely.